Hi, Sandra. Today I'd like to talk a bit about Jesus and Christ. And actually it is an elaboration of the concept of subjective and objective science. While I was working on this relationship between subjective science and objective science, because of course we have so-called objective science, but it's always done by subjective scientists, I realized that the levels of consciousness which are involved are somehow never studied. So I looked into that and at some point realized that the word Jesus and Christ presumably describe that transition between the mind determining what we think as the repository of the experiences that we have connected to memory, versus the soul determining what kind of experiences which we have, and the soul being part of that what is not memorized. So that means that the soul is like the beginner's mind, as it is called in the I Ching. Different forms of Zen have terminologies for it: baby mind, the naive or the intuitive mind. So there is that part of mind which is operative in every baby, every child. That is the mind by which we learn. And then at some point we have experiences stored in memory. And then there is another part of mind which works with that. So this story is about subjective science and objective science. It is also about intuition and memorization. In that sense, it is also about sciencing, which is the discovering of the unknown, and science, which is archiving of the known. And in that sense, we are also looking then at what happens when people are learning, and why is it that at some point they seemingly stop learning? In many cultures, there is this tradition of the pundit, the knowledgeable person who has knowledge and can quote a book and tell you, well, in the book it says this and this is how it should be. But there is not much difference between the pundits and the fundamentalists, because at the moment that people say, well, this is how it says in the book that it should be or is, that people think it should be so because it's in the book. And that means that people, in a way, are being lived by what is on record. In science, that has become to happen as well, because there are then people who declare that something is unscientific. And when you look into what they mean by this term unscientific, most often it is that what is not written in science, as if a Bible fundamentalist says, well, this is not in the Bible, so it cannot be so. And those people forget, seemingly, that there is always somebody who writes the Bible or who writes the text of science, and that the science which we have, the archive of knowledge which have been accumulated over past centuries, is not something which just happened by itself. The same as with the Bible, there is not somebody who suddenly has a 3D printout of a Bible dropping out of the void. There is always a translation process going for the consciousness to be coded in language, to be put in written form, to be put on paper so that other people can read it too. And evidently, there's quite a translation process involved as well, which babies need to learn to go through, and schooling gives or inflicts on people, that they learn to read and write so that they can understand a specific kind of code and associate it with thoughts. And when you look around the world, you can see that different cultures use different coding symbols, they have different languages, they have different interpretation of words, different meanings of words. So when people say this is written and so it is like that, then they forget that in the other culture they wrote down exactly the same experience in a different way, and thus look at it in a different way as a result. But for now, it is easier to just simply conclude that whatever people read somewhere has been written by someone. And in that sense, objective science always requires a subjective author to create it. Those thoughts I had in my mind for quite a while, and then I realized, thinking of this term Jesus and Christ, that this is actually describing exactly the same, because the word Jesus and the word Christ refer to different states of consciousness. Jesus, coming from the term Yeshua, which means teacher, so closely resembles that notion of the mind as our teacher, or the mind as our pundit, the mind as our memory box, which has information from the past, the knowledge, and that we can look at the world through the mind. And in that sense, the mind is not the spectacle that we have on our nose, but the spectacle that we have in our brain, in our head. It is a filter, and it is based on what we already know. And as a result, mind connects to memory, but memory is an experience of the past, it's not in the present. So when we talk about memory as the foundation of what we know, we are essentially talking about a replay of something that we have experienced. But it also means that if memory is the foundation of knowledge, then there is something fundamentally lacking. And that what is missing is where that knowledge come from. What is the origination of that experience? When you look at the stories which I did already about freedom of choice, then it is easy to see that freedom of choice is connected to the unknowing, and the getting to know, the finding out, the discovery. But when people say that something is scientific only because it has been written down, or that mind, something is true only if mind already knows it, then we end up with specifically that kind of problem which is formulated in the definition of classical science, that it must be verifiable, repeatable, and predictable. But if that is the case, then first of all, it only applies to classical science, because that is material science, that is where things are fixed, and thus repeatable, and verifiable, and predictable, for the simple reason that nothing changes. But on the other hand, if people then say that things need to be fixed and repeatable, predictable, verifiable in order to be scientific, essentially what they're saying, it needs to be a replay of something. And that means that science is disconnected from sciencing, and that the people who believe in that actually want to have repetition or replays of things instead of original experiences. That is fundamentally different. If people can only see something because they recognize it, that is what a lot of people have, and a lot of tribes have, that if people is of their tribe, then everything is recognizable and they can repeat their behavior. But it also means that they're living by reflex. And in the story of freedom of choice, it starts with freedom of choice, then a decision which defines how you relate to things, and then a conviction or a belief, which is how you choose to interact with things and what you don't interact with. And out of that comes the reflex, the behavior, the comportment. But that means that the people who work in this way and think of science in this way, of something that needs to be repeatable, a memory of something in the past, then they're actually working at the reflex level. And some while ago, I also suddenly thought back of this biblical saying that thou shalt not have graven images before me, or of anything in the sky, or anything on the land, or anything in the water. And specifically, you shall not be a servant of those graven images, those symbols, those representations. When looked at in that manner, a lot of the science which we know today is actually such a representation. So from that biblical perspective, science, they would probably call it abomination. In any case, it's a representation, it's a graven image, it's a model. And as I've said at other times as well, whenever scientists call objective about when they speak about objective science, they talk about a scientific object, but the scientific object is simply a linguistic object. It is something that they have given a name, that they have measured, that they have weighed, that they have described, and then whatever they have put down on paper replaces that what they were looking at. And again and again, I then think back of this biblical kind of insight. Do not replace the landscape by the map, as system theory described it already a long time ago. We should not confuse reality as a noun with a reality as a creation. Specifically, we should not look at reality, but realize that we are always dealing with a realization. And in that sense, the word Jesus or teacher, which we then can associate with the mind, also becomes connected to a closed mind in the sense of system theoretical analysis, where they call it a closed system. Now, something that is within a boundary, confined, defined. The complement, the dual, the opposite of that is the open mind, which pertains to the open system, which is outside of the boundary. It is not confined, it's not defined, so it is not something that is a memory. But that's what people don't talk about. And that's where I suddenly realized that the story of Jesus and Christ can be very nicely interpreted as the relation between mind and soul, or memory and learning, more specifically, closed mind and open mind. And looked at in that way, then I created a table. Essentially the table that I keep on using again and again and again, which is based on the idea of system theory, that you have open systems and closed systems. It is at the core of this whole four-dimensional dynamic logic, which I discovered long, long time ago, which essentially said that the boundary is a separator but also a connector, and that when we work with anything, we need to realize that there is a complementary view of that as well. That is not just that we can look at it from one side only, from what's on this side on the boundary, which we call yes or we call normal, and then on the other side of the boundary we call it no or we call it abnormal. Because for the people who are living on the other side of the boundary, that what we call abnormal is their normal. And in the same way, our no is their yes. When you look deeper into that, using the four-dimensional dynamic logic, you can see that the yes and no are complementary. People also call that good and evil, or God and devil. God and good, of course, are related words, and evil and the evil, devil, devil is the same word in essence. And when you look at the word meanings, you could actually say that evil is simply life spelled backwards. So on the one side you call it life, on the other side of the boundary you call it evil. And the only difference is that you cross from one side to the other, but essentially ignored it. So when you call something evil, you should realize that you have passed on to the other side of a boundary somehow, and that what you consider to be life before now is the opposite. But that is not something to do with what you find at that other side of the boundary, but that in going to the other side of the boundary you have not realized that you are now looking at the inverse or the mirror image or the complement of what you were looking at before. When you look at the foundation of our being, and let's say that it starts with the zygote, the first cell in the body, and then on the one side of the border there's you, on the other side of the border there's the universe, and calling the universe evil because you call yourself live doesn't make much sense. The experience of living seems to be all about getting to know the other side of the boundary and being able to maintain your integrity on your side of the boundary. And that transition from life to evil, or from one side of the boundary to the other side of the boundary, is then what can easily be connected to so many other examples of this boundary transition, which has to do with the four-dimensional dynamic logic, that a boundary is actually defined by say the ball and the wall. If it bounces back, there is a wall. If it doesn't bounce back, there is no wall. The wall then represents the boundary. If there is no boundary, people call that a field. So system theory has this relationship between the boundary and the field, and they use the word closed for the boundary and open for the field. If you look at the boundary itself, the one side and the other separated, so the boundary is a separator, but at the same time it connects the opposite, so it's also a connector. And in that way we seem to be living on the boundary all the time, but so many of the descriptions that we have ignore that. And I think that if we look at the word Jesus and the word Christ from that perspective of the boundary, then suddenly we can see that it is a state of consciousness which is identified with, say, identification, and the other is a form of not disidentification or alienation, but rather opening up, de-defining or undefining, leaving the definitions out. And in the cascade of the freedom of choice, we have freedom of choice, then we can have a decision, then we have a conviction, then we have conduct. So in that taking of a decision, we define ourselves, and the counterpart is to de-define ourselves. That de-defining of ourselves is essential anytime we have a conduct, thus a reflex, which doesn't work. And that is always the case when the conditional behavior, the reflex behavior, doesn't fit the circumstances. Life has become evil. The reflex, which was effective, becomes counterproductive. Instead of people being helped by what they learned before, they are hurt by what they learned before. And so when that happens, many people are not aware that they are living by reflex, because as the American Book of the Dead says it, if you don't know that you're in bardo, you will most likely be in bardo. If you don't know that you're living by reflex, you are living by reflex. And a lot of what people do is determined by reflex. Repetitions, routines, rituals, and those forms of reflex for body, mind, soul, and spirit that we see in society, in things having been put on paper, agreements being reenacted in the future, but also being applied to other people in what they call the system of law, or in the transactions that people don't see, well, this is the money I have and this is the money you need. And then, like in so many other countries, they determine a price which suits the two people, but that they have a uniform price for anybody and everybody, regardless how large or how small their wallet is. So, in society, we have seen a lot of decontextualizations, that things are taken out of context, they are abstracted, and they are no longer specifically valid for what's happening there. And that's where we can see these terms come in, like good and evil, God and devil. But when we look at the deeper level, we can say that such thoughts about true and false are also related to how we perceive things and how we think about things, how we reflect on them. In India, they call that samsara versus maya, the things that we perceive versus the image that we created out of that. You can also say that's the difference between perception and projection, or feeling and emotion, and also intuition and knowing. So what I'm trying to do is build a bridge across the differences between the closed mind and the open mind, using this concept of Jesus versus Christ. And in that transition, which is described in the religions but not described in science, I want to transfer that what has been chronicled in religion, but not as a religious construct, but simply as a kind of principle that in us there is this possibility to change gear, to shift gear, to get out of our mind into a larger understanding. And that brings me to the core of this whole concept of Jesus versus Christ, or objective versus subjective, or mind versus soul, that in us we have this possibility to grow up, and in growing up, as a baby, we'll work with intuition, and we learn to work with mind, but we should not get caught in the prison of the mind. And because as soon as we get caught in the prison of the mind and think that we need to know something before it is real, and think that something needs to repeat before it can exist, then we immediately dismiss intuition, we dismiss learning, we dismiss uniqueness, and in fact we have already created a kind of robot reality long before robots were even invented. So what I'm looking for is a understanding of that switch, which takes place in growing up, where people, babies, work from that intuitive knowledge only, for the simple reason that as the Jesuits and other such related ilk would say, the tabula rasa of the mind is still empty. And we now understand more that as the mind fills up with knowledge of experience, it can also fill up with junk knowledge from the experience of others. And as a result, that what is existing in mind is not necessarily pure knowledge, it is not necessarily real knowledge, It can actually be a fabrication of beliefs, because mind simply gets its information from memory, and when there is no information in memory that mind can work with, there is no routine, there is no ritual, there is no reflex, then mind goes mad in a way. A failure executing archived reflex, F-E-A-R, fear, is what then happens. Mind starts to look in the memory banks but cannot find anything that suits the circumstances, and as a result it can't function anymore. Mind cripples itself by, like a cat running around in circles. So mind disables itself, but people at that time don't realize that they so simply quit minding things and should stop expecting to know about things, but need to go back to beginner's mind, to ignorance, to naivete, to not knowing, as they did as a baby. Things simply are as they are. And actually that is the core of a lot of philosophies and a lot of religions, that whatever you think there is, that is simply a maya, an interpreted imagination or an interpreted impression of what happened around you at that time. It doesn't say that what you were perceiving was correctly perceived. You might have been colorblind and missed out on a message. You might have been tone deaf and not heard a warning sign. There might be lots of reasons why something didn't compute properly, for the simple reason that perhaps you were distracted, missed out on a part of the story, and then what you ended up with was a fragmented part of the story which doesn't work, which wasn't appropriate, which was not correct. So in that sense we cannot trust what is in memory. We cannot trust Jesus. We cannot trust the teacher, Yeshua, the pundit, the archiver, the memory banks. And as many religions then say, that if things don't fit anymore, then essentially you should do what all primitive tribes do. If you look at the forms of healthcare, you can see that it is always coming back to realizing reality. Let me just add this little bit of integral healthcare perspective. In the West, they think that they need to fix the symptom. They need to fix something, and that needs to be done by somebody outside. In the East, they realize that if you're sick, it's because something went wrong in what you took in or what you put out. And maybe you didn't eliminate toxins from your body, or you didn't assimilate nutrients into your body. So yoga and Ayurveda are about reconnecting into nature in a natural way, so that the body can re-find its embedding in the environment. And once that process restarts, the body cleans out, the body refuels with whatever it needs, food and information, and it is recalibrated, retuned. So where the healing of the West works on repair from outside by others, and generally too late, the East has this connection and reconnection into nature as an ongoing process, done with others as a lifestyle. The Far East realized that at the moment that the circumstances change, you need to tune into that. So with acupuncture and other techniques, as the seasons change, the body might be lagging behind or it may be racing ahead. You synchronize it in the same way that a car mechanic would get the contact points synchronized properly so that everything fires up properly, and in the same way the meridians are synchronized so that the processes of the internal and the external are in balance yet again. So the East can do the healing and the Far East can do the early detection and early correction. And you can do that for yourself, you can do that with others, you don't need invasive techniques. You do it in a regular rhythm, and then the body doesn't lose track, it doesn't lose its rhythm, it doesn't lose its calibration. the Far West goes one level deeper and works with the realization that if you are out of kilter with reality, it's because your realization is not no longer of what goes on around you, but it is anchored on something that lives within you or came from somebody else. Then it's called vetiko, the transmittable disease of derealization, false realization, the experience of falsehood. And what is needed done then is that people go back into nature, go back into the rhythm of nature, go walk about, spirit quest, live in nature, so that they realize, and that from their body they realize, that we are part of nature, and what we think about things is not what really matters if our body actually needs to be connected into Earth for our well-being and our survival. So in understanding that the derealization of reality is the cause of, say, basically all diseases, because if you have the wrong image of reality, then the information integration system in us, the consciousness system, which works with pure information, it can't work well because it's working with incorrect information. If the information is correct, then the system regulation, which takes place in the decision-taking process, the immune system, the neurons and the hormones, the whole regulatory system in the body, which is electromagnetic, it will do things not in the right way. It will not be well calibrated anymore. That's where the Far East and calibrates it with the acupuncture points and other techniques. But if that doesn't happen, then the mistake in the system regulation at that electrical level result in errors in, say, computation in the body realization, the physiology. So the physiology goes in the wrong way because people are still angry about something that doesn't exist, and they make their body too acidic. They have hormone levels which are not appropriate for the circumstances and not healthy for the body. And if they don't go running and walk it off or otherwise get rid of it, then they toxify their body. And if they start to compensate for these kind of shifted hormone or neurone level by addictions of various kinds, and most of the addictions are of that kind, that people start to compensate or keep compensating for something that they don't fix, then the physiology cannot but carry out an error in the anatomy, and they'll end up with a sick body. So the anatomy is the consequence of the physiology, which is the consequence of the regulatory system, which is a consequence of the information integration system. And it is at that level that we can then talk again about Jesus and Christ. Jesus is then what you learned to put into your memory banks, let's call it the body of knowledge, which we build individually but also collectively. And parallel to the way we build our body of knowledge individually, we have our physiology of the body, which works by the same principle. So the digestion of food and the digestion of information takes place in the same organs. In the physiology, we see that there is a circulation of molecules, but actually it is a circulation of electromagnetic spectra. And the cells respond to the electromagnetic spectra way before the molecules are there. So in the immune system, which is also the specification of identity and integrity, all what happens there is at the electromagnetic signaling level, which is also, let's say, atomic, and in the atomic sense also where the cells form and transform molecules, that's also at atomic level. But that forming and transforming of molecules is only possible if there is a shifting of electrons in the story. So all of that needs to be electromagnetic, well coordinated, well orchestrated throughout the whole body, but electromagnetic nevertheless. And it is so well orchestrated and so well coherent because in the body there is the information system the radio information field, which is electromagnetic, which is however non-particular, and as Ted Rolling says, it is that field which then positions and repositions the electrons, as a result of which the atoms can do different things, as a result of which molecules can form in a different way, as a result of which body materials can be formed in a different way, and all of that is happening in the cells and done by the cells. But if the cells have the wrong information, then it doesn't go right. So if Jesus, the teacher, or the bookkeeper, or the pundit, the information which we have is not correct, then the knowledge in us apparently doesn't give the solution. And as I mentioned before, if the internal knowledge is incomplete, the mind starts to look for information, it can't find it, and the result is fear. And recently I realized that fear comes only from other people. Nature does not work with fear. Nature does not communicate fear. Nature does not know fear. Nature simply has a change in circumstances. And if you realize that that's happening, then stress becomes stimulus. And if you know that it is taking place, then fear becomes fascination. So in that sense, this boundary between the closed mind and the open mind is fascinating, because it is so pivotal, it is so crucial, it is so essential. As in Islam it is said that the boundary between good and evil is as sharp as a razor blade. Actually, it is just one quantum leap, because it is that quantum leap which discerns the distinction between a closed system and an open system. When you look at science, the closed system is what material science works with. Actually, relativity theory works with it as well. Classical theory is like a baby. It says, well, what we know applies for everything. It's universal, and you better believe it. It's a belief system. Relativity theory came by and said, well, actually, there is a limit to what we can know. There's a speed of light, and then we cannot look beyond that. We are blind for the unknown. So what we know is only the known, and in that sense, relativity theory created the painting of the prison that we live in. We live within that event horizon. Max Planck came by with the quantum theory and said, well, actually, Albert Einstein, when you drew that X on the paper and said that is the light cone, the light comes in on one point, goes through the zero point, comes out at the other point, that means that the wave node in that ray of light that you are looking at, that the leading edge of that wave node is not the barrier of light, which is where everything ends. That is simply where in that zero point, that what already is turns into what is becoming. So in the quantum leap, we go from one side of the barrier of light to the other side of the barrier of light. In the wave node, which is at the far end of the light ray, we are actually extending into the unknown. But in order to do that, we need to do that rotation through that zero point, that quantum leap going from one side to the other. And then once we are on the other side, we get out of our limited mind and we go back into the open mind. So in that sense, the pivotal moment of the quantum leap, in that zero point of the light cone of Albert Einstein, is where we then take the Max Planck quantum leap into the unknown. And that's where we then go from Jesus into Christ. Jesus is the knowledge within the limitations of what the mind knows, within the material, within the molecular, within the atomic, up to the speed of light. But once we are outside of the speed of light, we need to realize that the ray of light which Einstein was looking at that zero point, at the farthest bit of the ray of light as it was traveling, he could not imagine how that ray of light then made the next wave in the light ray. And that's where Max Planck said, well, you just have to take that step into the unknown and then the path will form itself. Fizelka too quoted that in her description of the light work that she's doing. So the light ray will form itself because it will continue itself because you're continuing with it. You're traveling the beam of light and then it will extend and unfold. So to get out of Jesus consciousness and into Christ consciousness is actually built in right at the core of everything that is. What we then need to realize is that that leading edge of ignorance versus knowing, or rather from knowing to ignorance, from the person who thinks that they know to the child who knows that they don't know, is where we step into this void, this abyss of unknowing. But that void or this abyss of unknowing is simply leaving the mind with all its collections of images and words and memories, the electromagnetic bundles and knots of what we have experienced in the past, the CD-ROM of localized experiences. And realize, just as we were as a baby, that before we had those experiences, which were stored, which we had experiences in the present. So the experiences which are stored are simply the ones in memory. The experience in the now and here are the ones that we are actually experiencing. So in the now and here we are living, and what we retrieve from memory, and computers do that, and artificial intelligence likes to do that, but that all of that is in the past. That's no longer true. It's no longer relevant. It's a memory. Might be reusable, could be recycled, but computers are recyclers, and artificial intelligence is recycled reality. It's not a realization. So once that is understood, it is important to realize that we should not get stuck in the graven image, and as the biblical terminology puts it, and we should certainly not become subservient to it. We should specifically not let that replace reality, because the reality which is based on memory is no longer a realization. It is a third of a mental process, and it's not the mental process itself. It is not active life. It is life turned backwards, in a sense. So with that understanding, then it becomes much more easy to see that objective science and subjective science are intimately connected in that zero-point transition of the light cone of Albert Einstein at the moment that you take that leap of faith, which Max Planck called the quantum leap. But when you look into that light ray a bit deeper in the way that Calvin Abraham provided in Tetrionics, then you can see that a light ray is actually not, as Einstein looked at it, of a wave train of waves. He got stuck in his understanding of what's happening because he left out the wave envelopes. And when Max Planck said, you take the next step in the quantum leap, that's where the reality ends, because that's where the wave stops and that's where the wave node is. But that wave node is actually also the wave node of the wave envelope of the next wavelength before it and the wavelength before that. So that wave node is actually like a hologram. All of these wave nodes of the whole length of the wave train of that ray of light are there. So for every wave doubling, for every wave tripling, for every wave quadrupling, there is a wave envelope. And all of these wave envelopes are there in that leading edge point of that crise de conscience, the taking of consciousness, the turning of consciousness, the edge of reality, the edge of realization. And whatever was there in the past will carry forward. It will make that movement of unfolding into the future. And so Tetrionics shows that in the zero point, there is this whole hologram already projected forward, but not tangibly there yet, because the ray of light has not been there yet. But in phase space, it is already there. And Bill Tiller, in his work, was very specific, telling me that, but realized that in that zero point, it is always said that the electromagnetic wave goes through that zero point as the electric goes there and the magnetic goes there, but any minute change will shift what happened there, and so whatever happens in that turning point is where that hologram of what can be projected into the future, which already exists in the quantum space, can then be unfolded in a different way. And then the story of Jesus turning into Christ becomes very much more pragmatic. In the biblical sense, the story has the Maranatha moment of before my God, why have you forsaken me? It is memory bank speaking, saying, I don't have a solution here. I don't know what to do. I don't know what to do. I don't know what to do. And that keeps on going until that zero point is addressed and the mind is stopped. The person, the mind of the person, the memory-based mind is stopped, and the soul, that is the soul. The soul is then the thinking process without memory storage as the retrieval source, but the experience of the outside world as the information source. A soul can then kick in and say, "My God, it's always been there. I just had to step out of my beliefs." And of course, with people having had 2 years of belief programming in the COVID era, people know that they can get stuck in belief. They know that they can be manipulated in their belief by others. They now probably started to understand that fear does not come from reality, but only from others. Fear only comes when you believe that your mind cannot work for you because somebody else tells you that you're impotent, you're incapacitated, or whatever. When people don't play that game anymore, they don't fall back on what was, they don't fall back on what they had been told, but simply accept that things are as they are, same as the vision quest of the Indians, same as the walkabout in Australia, same as all of these initiations, exploring the unknown in the outer world of the inner world, which is what people do, what tourists do, what discoverers do, what scientists do. They don't fear the unknown because they realize that this whole universe is one song. It is all connected, this is all interrelated, it's a vast hologram. Most of it we cannot even see because there's no light there, or there's no light yet there. And once we experience that, then this Maranatha moment comes of Jesus turning into Christ, and the memory banks no longer being the limitation, the prison of what we can think. And then we go out of closed mind into open mind, and that's what the biblical terminology. You cannot enter into heaven if you don't have the mind of a child. In the I Ching, it says you need to operate beginner's mind. Zen Buddhism says you need to have the open mind, the exploring mind, the beginner's mind. So in our life, we then have that moment that we stop basing ourselves on knowledge and in fact stop thinking with the mind and start thinking with the soul. And the soul is that part of the mind which is the unlimited mind, the open mind. And what I find so fascinating is that I now can look at this with this realization that in our body we actually see how it works. And I could also come to this explanation of the relationship between Jesus and Christ, because in the past weeks I've been doing this work on the four light fields of the body. Which are actually quantum fields. The light field is just a surface that we can look at in the way that Einstein envisioned that. We need to look beyond that in the way that Max Planck said, we need to take the quantum leap. And as Bill Tiller said, actually what we do in that turning point decides everything, because as Tetrionic says, we are actually weaving the hologram. So if we have four light fields, we are always working with the holographic interplay between them. There's the universal light field, the light field that from the zygote out created the body. There's the interference light field between the body light field and the universal light field, which is our aura, which is like the gearbox where we can navigate in the environment. It's like our dashboard. And then these three light fields interplay with the body, so that the body projects light around it and in a way works as our cursor on the screen in reality and signals to the environment where we are, what we are doing, so that we get echoes back from the environment, and those echoes come to our sensory system as vibrations on the surface of the body from the sensory cells, zero point, through the neuron, one-dimensional line, into the plexus, two-dimensional plane, into the brain, three-dimensional volume. We create this Gabor hologram of what we call real. So in understanding that we have these four light fields interacting, and we interplay with that, and these light fields actually are then used by the cells to do what they do, which then becomes what we do, we have our space-time suit in this reality, which we can navigate because of that light field. But as said before, what we see as the light field is simply the barrier of light, which Einstein looked at, but the barrier of light, that was also part of this text which I did on the four light fields, that the barrier of light, which Einstein presented as our event horizon, the limits to what we can know, the limits of mind, is actually the same as the barrier of consciousness, what we know and what we cannot know, which is the same as the barrier of sound. The barrier of light is for photons, the barrier of sound is for phonons. But the barrier of sound we can see is simply the same as a wave on an ocean. And that's where the four-dimensional dynamic logic then becomes so practical, because then you can see that if you flatten the curve of that wave, it stops being a wave crest and a turning point from one side and the other side, but instead it's one side and the other side, and it's actually then dissolves in both sides together. So that's where the four-dimensional dynamic logic then comes in and says, well, knowing this, the act of creation is essentially the creation and elimination of these differences. The generation, operation, and destruction of the boundary in phase space, G-O-D, God. But the generation, operation, and destruction need to be integrated, so you need the I God, you need to be part of the story, as Bill Tiller says. Your participation shifts everything in creation. It's the fulcrum of Archimedes. By changing how you interact with the universe can interact with you differently. We can do that individually, we can do that collectively. So as creators in creation, we have this immense and intense power, but it only works if we have the right system of reference. So having formulated these four light fields over the past 2 weeks, I then saw that it is also necessary to realize that we need to work from a different kind of consciousness when we do that. And the consciousness that we need is the one that goes outside of what we know, outside of this limitation of Einstein with his event horizon and there's the barrier of light and we cannot go beyond that. No, it's simply the barrier of consciousness. Because it's not about the light, but it is about phase space. It's not about energy, but it's about information. And in that phase space, as Tetronix so nicely shows, there is this whole geometry of everything being interconnected. And what we then need is to shift in our mind from knowing what we know to knowing what we don't know. As the biblical sense says, if you want to enter the gates of paradise or heaven, you need to go back to thinking like a baby, to being like a baby. You need to stop thinking in terms of I know it and this is how it is, I'm the teacher, I'm Jesus, but in fact I don't know what I know for the simple reason that what I know is something that I build up as a result of learning things in the environment, because it was in the environment already there. I simply integrated within me what happened outside of me, but the forms in which I know it are simply different forms of expression of how I got to know it. And if I stop looking at what I know, then I can see that it also can be otherwise. That's where one culture then can connect to another culture. Men can connect to women, humans can connect to animals. It's a bit what D'Arcy Thompson showed in his topological transformations. If you draw a herring on a piece of rubber, you stretch it in the length side, you get to see an eel. Stretch it in the width side, you get to see a box fish. Stretch it other ways and you get different kind of fish which you can see. That's the marvel of topology. But when you realize that the knowledge that you have, basically it's just as rubbery, you can stretch it one way, you can stretch it the other way, you can stretch it multiple ways, and then becomes other knowledge that you also have. And in the same way, then the knowledge that you have is simply another stretch to the knowledge that somebody else has as well. And that when somebody else has a different kind of thought, a different kind of thinking, it simply means that in the topology, Einstein then has all these curved time-space domains. In reality, the curvatures are much more intense, much more funny, much more complex, because they can turn inside out and do all kind of other things which he didn't allow for yet. So you need to add Planck to what Einstein was doing, and then suddenly you can see that these wormholes are simply that you decide that your participation in creation can also do something else, like in dancing, the dance of Shiva. And then you twirl around one way, the other way, and you find yourself in exactly the same position as your so-called enemy. As the Indians say, if you had walked in his moccasins, you would have ended up where he is, not only in that same position, but also in that same mindset. You would have disagreed with yourself. And once you realize that, you realize that the knowledge that you have could be different knowledge, that every separator in the logic that we have is also a connector, and that what we know in our confined mindset is simply an inverse way of what happens in the universal mindset, because our cell is just a drop in the ocean of consciousness of the universe. And if you turn yourself inside out, what we do with every sleep cycle, every night again and again, you are in the universe and you're back in the universe. And shamanic training, religious training, spiritual training is about helping people to do that. That's why cultures have these words of Ubuntu, Namaste. Ubuntu is I can see myself reflected in you. Namaste, I can see the godliness, the God creator, the being in you too. So we can see that we are all creators in universe. We can see that we all reflect out in a different way. And then the pieces of the puzzle can fall in place. But it requires that we stop thinking that the knowledge that we have is the knowledge that we have. And that we shift from the Jesus or I'm the teacher, I know, into the Christ. It's the Krishna consciousness of there is something going on in the universe, and however you look at it, you can see it in different ways. But the first thing you need to do is to stop thinking that the way you see it is the way it can be seen from any perspective. So science tends to look through the keyhole and says, this is how it is, you need to stand here, look through it, and that's how you see it. Artists open the door, walk around whatever is there in that other room, and see, hey, you can see it from different perspectives. Traders or catalysts come in and say, well, actually, on this side of the door, it's more expensive than on the other side of the door, so let's trade in. And then the mystics come in and say, well, actually, it's all the same. You just shifted position, and then that shifting of position becomes the key element. That becomes the essence of what we do and how we do it. And that then is also the essence of shifting from Jesus consciousness to Christ consciousness. Again, it's just that story that in the universal light field, we have a local light field, but between them there is this dashboard, this interface, this like the membrane of our first cell, which is where we navigate in reality. But we cannot navigate in reality if we think that what we see in the inside of our bubble is correct. We need to see that the Jesus mindset of this is my bubble, this is correct, this is how it is applicable. We need to see that the bubble of somebody else shows exactly the same from a different perspective. That's what in India they call Indra's web. That all of these bubbles are nodes in a spider web, as they show there, or let's say wave nodes in a hologram. And once you realize that what we are in our cell, we are a wave node in a hologram, then we can start to unfold that hologram and internalize, navigate that hologram. And there are some people who realize that. They stop thinking that what they know is what they know and started to go into a holographic gear. So they, in that sense, stop thinking based on memory. But at the moment that they start doing that, they automatically start to go from Jesus consciousness into Christ consciousness. Their memory, their mind, no longer looks through their eyes or their ears or their nose. Again, there's this biblical phraseology that if you eat from the earth, you will be hungry forever. If you drink from the earth, you will be thirsty forever. Because you need to have that to keep your impulses and inputs going. But as in the story of Odin, if you want to see reality, then you have to close your eyes. In the Odin story, the raven picked out his eye, which basically means that what you then see is him working through his third eye. But the people who don't understand how it works, they misinterpret that. They think he lost an eye and that his wisdom comes from... No, it's a bit like Tiresias the seer in Herod's story. If you want to see the invisible, you need to close your eyes. And if you want to see beyond your blind spots, you need to realize that your blind spots is where you can see the nothingness. You can see into the space where things are not, the no-thingness. And so that you go from the creator to the creation, from Jesus to Christ, and you start to realize that everything you see shows how everything is being formed. The Sufis have quite beautiful descriptions of that. Basically, all of cultures have artwork showing that, and that when you then shift into this Christ consciousness, you do the same with what happens in the Bhagavad Gita of Arjuna and Krishna. Arjuna is then basically there with his bow and arrow in the chariot, while behind him is Krishna, the charioteer, with the reins in hand and directing the horses. And Arjuna just keeps on focusing on so-called enemies, and the whole story is that these enemies are just other parts of us, and by focusing on it as the enemy, you'll see it as the enemy. But if you look at the larger picture, then you can see that it represents something totally different, specifically that there is another way to look at things. And it is very nice that if you look into the brain, you can see that Arjuna is the front brain, Krishna is the hind brain. Arjuna has the surface impulses, vibrations of the body. Krishna, through the spinal cord, knows what's going on the inside of the body. And that comes back to the starting point of the story. It's all about the outside and the inside and how we relate them. Do we only look at what's inside in the prison, in the cage, in the cave, of our mind, where we collected all of these pebbles of experiences. Basically, there's somebody collecting turd on the road, or will we burn the turd into the fire so that we can look out and see that there is more? And actually, in the Buddhist way of describing it, they then talk about if you're sitting at night by the campfire or with a candle, you're limited in what you can see. That's as far as the light goes. Again, that story of Einstein saying the speed of light determines what the reality is and so. And the Buddha said, well, do the quantum thing, blow out the candle, and then you can see into the dark. To put it in a different way, if it is daylight, then you can only see to the horizon, but at the moment that the sun sets, you can see light years away. So in the outer world, we have all kinds of reminders that we have two ways of seeing, which also means that we have two ways of looking, but that also means that in science, we need to extend our looking and realize that objective science is not that we can define an object, but that the object is a result of the observation, and that observation is not a noun, but a verb. Observation is not that what we see, but observation is the act and the intent and the dimensionality of our seeing. And observation as an object goes back to the Jesus or the it is like this kind of mind, but the observation as a verb is the what else is there to see. So the science is what people know, and there are people who actually have become fundamentalists who say, well, this is how it is. And the sciencing is what we can know, the learning. And in the growth of development, of course, in humanity, science has that role of the elimination of angst. It's an angst reduction technique for humanity. But it means that we need to realize that it's not more knowledge that we need. That's helpful, because then we can see more of how things connect and the things we miss out in seeing. But it's specifically that we go from objective science to subjective sciencing, and that we realize that every description of reality is actually a formulation of our realization. And that is something I realized long, long time ago, and it's only now that I came to connect that to this construct of Jesus turning Christ, that every description of an object, or every description of an observation, is actually a formulation of our observation. We need to go from noun to verb, and then we can go from Christ, from Jesus to Christ, from Arjuna to Krishna, from closed-minded to open-minded. If you want to have it as a word game, we need to go out of our mind. And the best way to do that is to go back to discovering and rediscovering how that was done as a child. So there's a lot of meditative techniques for that. There's a lot of wisdom techniques for that. Wisdom is actually knowledge plus experience. So once we start to look beyond our blind spots, then we can, in gazing at the nothingness, see how the gazing takes place. And that's actually a very old technique of magic and meditation and mystery schools. If you want to start seeing what you see, you need to start seeing how you see. And one of the easiest techniques which people have been learning is the so-called gazing. You gaze at a wall, and then the eyes just simply say, okay, you're feeding me the same again and again, I'm just switching off. The same you can do with your mind, the same you can do with your attention, the same you can do with your intention. When you focus it on the same thing all the time, then it stops. and then automatically you stop seeing what you were looking at, and you can start feeling how the seeing takes place. And it's intriguing that many shamanic techniques or many consciousness training techniques, they are based on such a shift in perception, and the most well-described shift in perception from Jesus to Christ are people who were overdosed on anesthetics, or people who fell off their horse or fell off the ladder or fell off their bike. Herkos was one of the clairvoyants, well-known, famous in the Netherlands. I think he fell off a ladder. Ananda fell off a bicycle. Carstens fell, was overdosed. And there's so many people who had something to nudge them. Sandra, you fell off the bicycle to crack the egg of realization. But so knowing that there is a way to crack the egg, to go from Jesus consciousness to Christ consciousness, of course makes it possible for others to do the same without getting hurt in the process. And so that's the essence of my story of the transition from Jesus to Christ. It's something that somebody could do, which means that it's somebody that everybody can do. It's just a matter of doing it. And for years I was sort of looking around it, but then I realized that the only way to look into the mirror is to see that you need to shift from seeing what you see to seeing what you don't see, what the seeing actually is, and that's in the beginner's mind and not in the pundit mind. So I'd like to leave it at that. Thank you.